Murray McCormick from the Regina Leader Post joins us. Murray, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how you doing? You know, the Riders are playing the Lions this week, eh?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, okay, just a little confused here with the Edmonton chat, but I can deal with it.
No. I know that. We were talking CFL, though, as far as...
Okay, and this is the CFL.
Yes, as the ratio... You've covered the league for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think... And you saw it in Saskatchewan. Ben Heenan goes to the Indianapolis Colts. The Riders have to give Dan Clark, who's an okay offensive lineman, 140% raise because there's no other Canadian offensive lineman, and you need seven Canadians starting under the new guidelines. Is that something the CFL should consider, dropping the amount of mandatory starters?
Then where would Dan Clark play? Would Dan Clark ever get an opportunity to play? Ben Heenan got a chance to play because of that Canadian rule. Like, the Canadian rule, I think it's so part of the Canadian Football League that I would be very, very much against the changing of the number of Canadian starters or nationals. I think it's such an important part of the game that's a sign of the good Canadian development. I just think it's a blip now that so many Canadians have gone down to the States. I have a feeling things are going to settle down a little bit more and there won't be this sort of migration. But where are these guys going to go and play? What are you going to tell a guy who's playing for U of A or U of R? You can't play in the CFL because we've gone to five starters, the Canadians, and some American guy's going to play your position. Dan Clark's making a pretty good living playing football in the CFL in Canada, in his hometown. And I think that's a just reward for what he's put into the game, hasn't he?
Yeah, no, that's valid. My question, why do you think it's just a blip that the Canadians are not going to be going to the NFL?
I just think the NFL is going to, I don't know. It's hard for me to see why a blip. I know why it's happened, because the CFL guys have film. And the number of leagues in the States are getting less and less. So there isn't film to see a guy do things. So they have film to do stuff. And that's why I think they're doing a great job of scouting. I just sense that I just can't see this many great Canadians coming out of the CFL. And it's nothing against their development, but I just think that this has just been kind of a rise in things. And I wish I had an absolute reason why I see that, but I have to admit I don't pay enough attention to the CIS to really say this is the reason why. But I just have a sense that this is more of an uprise, and I don't think it's going to be that way every year. Mind you, I could be proven wrong, but I just sort of sense that. Is that fair enough?
It's fair. I think to me, though, I think, you know, we are getting better players, and guys are coming and they're playing. And, you know, I think you want to get to the point. Like, I don't think Dan Clark, I still believe that even if you dropped the ratio, they still would sign Dan Clark. They wouldn't have had to give him a 140% raise, though. They probably would have had to give him like a 90% raise, which is still good. And maybe a little bit of a bonus laden contract. And he still would have started because the CFL didn't lose three Americans this year, or six in the last years going down. There's a lot of Americans who simply can't play offensive line. You bring them into camp, they're not any better necessarily. It's just, it wouldn't force you if you had injuries to have to throw in rookies. Like Dan Clark's in his fourth year now, right? I think he came out of the junior. So he's developed in time over 4 or 5 years where you could still do that. You would still be on the roster because you still need seven, and they just wouldn't guarantee that they have to be starters.
Yeah, but they wouldn't pay them that way, though. They wouldn't pay. He'd be making the minimum salary, which Dan Clark would be very happy with. Because I think $51,000 is pretty good money for any 26-year-old. A season is pretty good money, but they wouldn't pay that. I don't think it would be reflected that, and I don't think there'd be the emphasis put on developing kids because you could bring in more Americans to play, and they will play for cheaper too and whatnot. So I think it's a sense of balance, and I watch these guys, especially with Johnny. You see the guys, some juniors who put in their time and get an opportunity to start when a guy goes away to the States. So maybe it's just an opportunity. It's like injuries, and I think maybe you have to reward those guys for these chances. Kind of caught me off guard with this question, too, by the way.
No.
I'm so deep in 0-3 and all the angst in Regina. I'm going, making me think big picture and going, oh, my brain's not ready for big picture. I'm pretty deep.
Well, the reason Saskatchewan went through it with Heenan. Edmonton's gone through it. Yeah. We've seen Montreal, Calgary, same. And now Calgary's offensive line's even worse with the two broken legs recently. And the reason I brought it up was you don't just have once all, like, if the Eskimos were lucky that Brian Ramsey, who they just cut, was a veteran, they could bring him back when Greg White got injured. There's no other Canadian veterans. I was scouring around. Like, if Saskatchewan or Calgary lose more Canadian offensive linemen, they literally have no one to replace them with.
That's a very good point, but they literally replaced some defensive backs with Canadians. They lost, with Keenan McDougal went down here, and now Keenan McDougal and Scott Mahan, some other guys. So they've added special teamers. They've signed Paul Waldo. They've signed Dan West, a fine special teamer from Winnipeg. So a national. So there are those players. There aren't enough good offensive linemen But who would expect one team to lose two tackles in one game I'm watching that going, I don't think I've ever seen that. Have you ever seen that kind of that injury like that to two tackles in one game?
Not as severe and not both legs. And obviously different severities of broken legs for those teams. And you know, and then it's scary when you have to put a D lineman in, and that's in the course of a game because if the defense calls a blitz and that defensive lineman, because he's now playing O line, he's not used to the call, misses it, and Bo Levi Mitchell gets crushed because you got a D line playing out of position. Now your star players are getting injured because of it.
But give Calgary credit for having the foresight to take Quinn Smith in that draft, knowing that he played on the offensive line. So, you know, there was a time when guys played both sides of the line, maybe before I was born. No, I don't know about that. But I thought that was Quinn Smith was an offensive lineman before he came into the CFL. So that they kind of foresaw that, and maybe it might have worked with him a little bit in training camp to get him ready for that eventuality. And it did, because to be honest, I didn't think he looked out of place there, did he? I didn't notice him in there.
No.
He was in there, so
you know, Murray, I think you're right. I mean, I think it can vary from year to year. It's kind of freakish when you get injuries like we're talking about. I want to swing back to what your brain is focused on, though, as if you haven't had enough of that recently.
Yeah, exactly.
0-3, you know, we know when a team's short a quarterback, it's going to be a tough start. You know, second time this has happened for you guys in the last couple of years. Corey Chamberlain, is there any pressure building on him now, or is he handling this 0-3 start pretty well?
Can I say both? I was surprised. You guys probably talked about his reaction the other day when it was kind of like, he brought up the talk about people can fire me, whatnot. I'm worried about my future and stuff. Mm. I was kind of re-listening to those interviews, and no one asked him if he thought he could be fired. So in my mind, it was a little bit calculated. He saw the reaction to what happened after losing another close overtime game, squandering another fourth quarter lead, and decided he needed to get his point of view across without the media interpreting it or anything what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Just say, and he's very calculated. He's done this before, become very aware of it. So I think he did a good job of handling it. He kind of diffused the situation. He answered the questions. He said, the minority of fans are calling for him to be gone, even in Saskatchewan. To call for a firing of a head coach at 0-3 is a little premature. So I think it's kind of, he just wanted to get out in front of that. And that was very calculated. And I kind of think he handled that well. He talks to the players all the time. And it's kind of parts about that game on last Friday. He told them about his reasons for the decisions of gambling on 3rd-and-1 twice. And he talked about his, and he said, do any of the players have an issue with this? And none of them said anything. But he kind of allowed the players to maybe have some input into what's going on after the fact. So is he handling it? He's handling it very well. He's handling it very personally. I've always said Corey Chambers is a very, very smart man. Mm-hmm. He's a very smart head coach, and he's very aware of what his team's thinking and what's going on with his team. So he may portray the fact that the fans may look like he had thinner skin than we thought, but his skin is pretty thick when it comes to this, and he can handle all the pressure. Now, if they're 0-7 come the bye week, I may have to change my song a little bit differently, but I don't think this team, I think they're close enough to winning that I think they're going to win. Tomorrow night they're in Regina against the Lions at home at Mosaic Stadium, which hasn't been, they haven't won here yet, and I think the fans are ready, because of what he said, to rally behind their coach and behind the team, and they may help carry them to the win.
Murray, you talk about Chamberlain being in tune with his players, and you know, you're pretty much in tune with what's going on with Chamberlain and his players too. I mean, your honest take on this, not about faith in Chamberlain. He can't worry about that. If he's going to get fired, he's going to get fired, and I agree with you, it would be premature. But when you have a stretch where you two stretches where you've lost a quarterback, you can't worry about it, but there is a level of frustration that can seep in when you don't get results. This is a good football team, but right now it's an 0-3 good football team. So is there some massaging that needs to be done by the coaching staff inside that room to make sure guys don't just get, let the shoulders droop and the heads get down?
I think that he's done that already, but I think these guys also know they know what's going on. They've seen they've lost 3 games by 9 points. Couple of overtime games. If we've been on the CFL now, the overtime games are a bit of a crapshoot. That can happen. So they know they're close. And I talked to a number about that today. If you read my story tomorrow, it's about how there is belief in this team. Jerome Messam tweeted, we believe, Rob Bagg told me they believe. There's still a lot of belief in this team that they're still going ahead. If you think about it, in the last, since Durant's gone down, they haven't won many games. Like they lost that losing streak. So losing Durant's a huge blow to this team every time. So I think people, the smart people know this is a good football team. There's still a lot of room for it to grow and develop. And having Kevin Glenn there gives them a stopper. But the majority of fans, I think, are patient. And as the players are, they know that things are going to get better. They're hoping they're going to get better. Because one thing that happens, this people don't know, this early part of the season was so home-loaded for the Riders due to the CFL schedule. They finish up the regular season with four or five games on the road. They're like the Argos in reverse this year. So the fact that they're losing games at home now is pretty concerning because they're going to need these wins when they go on the road to all these other places at the end of the season.
Looking we're here, Murray, and it's, you know, speaking of the home stadium, I've seen pictures all the time coming out from the new facility. Is it supposed to be ready next year or the year after?
2017, and it is going to be fabulous. Can I be a little biased here? Hey, it's my tax dollars. I can do anything I want. But I drive by regularly, and I look up there, and I get literally excited about the thing, the way the stadium's going to look, the positioning, the sight lines and everything. And, boy, it's going to be just one of those stadiums we're going to say, Saskatchewan, how did you guys do it? We did it because we had the money, the potash money, all that stuff. But I am a little excited about the stadium, and I think I'm allowed to be that way, being a guy from Regina. But it is going to be spectacular, and I think people, the CFL, it's going to be the one that even I think teams from other markets in North America will look at. You can build a stadium for under $1 billion and make it serve your clients very well and your team. So it's pretty exciting stuff. Do I sound a little excited?
Well, no, you should be. Edmonton fans feel the same way about the new hockey facility that will be ready next October. Many drive by it sometimes when the roads are open due to major construction for it. But with that that heavy home schedule for the Riders, and you know what? There's no more passionate fan base in the CFL than Saskatchewan. The Riders haven't played bad. They're 0-3. They've played bad in the fourth quarter. But for the majority of games, they haven't played bad. But this would probably be the time they could get out of town and it would be better, because something tells me they're feeling much more pressure from the home crowd than they would be if they were getting away on the road for a bit.
The home crowd tends to be pretty loving. Like the fans are, they kind of like their Riders here. The people that pay for the tickets are going there to cheer for their team. They're not going there to boo them because they bought their season tickets long ahead of this. So I kind of think it's the people that don't go to the games that put the pressure on them, the ones that watch it on TV, the ones that fill the chat lines and go on the talk shows that place more pressure on them. And to be honest with you, other than they say they don't listen to any of that. I know they read the paper all the time, so I realize that. But they say they don't feel the pressure of the social media. So I think at Mosaic Stadium, there might be a few people booing, but it's more of their supportive crowd, and they want the team to win because it's their team. They've invested money in them in season tickets, and they want them to win. So it'd be kind of like counterproductive to boo against them when you pay the money. Now, a little naive on my part, but that's what I've seen at Mosaic Stadium. It's always kind of been, in my time on the beat, it's always been kind of a love in between the fans and the team. And that's been in my time on the beat. Other than 2011, they've been pretty good every season, so I haven't seen the extended struggles.
Murray, immediate concern, obviously, the BC Lions. More of the same from Saskatchewan, because you say they have played pretty well for the most part. They've lost some close games, but that doesn't reflect in the standings. 0-3 is 0-3. Or any new wrinkles that you throw in for BC?
Well, Weldon Brown, who you guys know from BC, from Edmonton, playing there, is out for the season with a torn pectoral muscle, and that's huge. You know, they've had some injuries this year. They've lost Durant. They've lost Shea Emery, who they traded for the middle linebacker, a huge hole last year. And now they lose Weldon Brown, who I don't know if Edmonton appreciated how good this guy is, but he's a little 5'10" DB, and he shut down Manny Arsenal for Friday's game for 58 minutes, where he held him to 5 catches for 49 yards. And Arsenal is a big, strong receiver. So out goes Brown with the injury. In overtime, goes to Arsenal. Arsenal wins the game going over Tyree Holland. So the Riders added Jeff Tisdale, another strong cover guy, but the Alouettes were unsure if he could handle the new rules. So that's one of the wrinkles that we're going to see tomorrow night, is if Tisdale can come in and play the illegal contact rules, keep his hands in his pockets, and not get caught up and not get 3 or 4 illegal contact calls, like a lot of new DBs tended to do this year with the new rules. So that's kind of a little bit of a new wrinkle. That's about it. You know, I think if I could tell people to watch, and I think if they want to take an idea of what these new rules are like, there's a punter on the Riders called Ray Early, who has really adapted to the new rules with a lot, the really deep hang time, really high hang time and deep. So that allows the two waves because the interior guys can't leave the offensive line till the guy actually kicks the ball. Mm-hmm. And they have really adapted to that new rule with Early's punts. And you can really see how that rule and the effects it has on the league can be impacting how special teams are adapting, because the Riders only allowed one 15-yard punt return, the longest one of the year. So it's been very effective. So it's kind of neat watching this, if you know what I mean. And I'm just saying I've been watching this guy and how the special teams have adapted with this great punting game.
Murray, we appreciate your time. It should be an interesting weekend. The Riders trying to get the first win of the season, taking on the VC Lions again. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Always good talking to you guys. Kind of be nice to have a win, just have an easy week before they have to play Hamilton.
There's no shortage of storylines when Ken Austin is taking on the Riders.
No, it is. It's always a good one.